it really started with family. So, you know, family would get together and, you know, they have those, whether it's a barbecue or birthday or whatnot. And then at some point, somebody's going to start like a sing-along and everything. And the reason why I say it starts with family, because those sing-alongs, a lot of the times are really karaoke, even if we're not prefacing it as karaoke. But this is, you know, because you'll have that one cousin or aunt or uncle who, like, this is their song. And they kind of, you know, so there's like, you know, you got to let them have their moment.
Hello and welcome back to The Greatest Song Ever Sung Poorly, the podcast that takes karaoke exactly as seriously as it should be taken. I'm your hip hop, a hippie to the hip hop and a don't stop karaoke host, Adam Wainwright.
And I'm rocking to the bang bang boogie, said up jump the boogie to the boogie of the boogity bee, Ed Kennard.
That's about as easy as it gets, Ed, for an open right there. I think that's the quickest you've ever come up with a response to my intro.
It's quite possible, yeah.
You would think that the category, the thing we're talking about this week, is kind of right up your alley. Like, this is home for you, isn't it? Like, you have a home, but if we're talking about music, if we're talking about karaoke, like, this is like a blending of two of your greatest loves coming together.
It really is. I mean, let's face it, I grew up in Hot 97 airspace. I listened to this stuff almost exclusively growing up, which is kind of why our tastes in it are somewhat different, because there's a slight age gap between me and my best friend Adam Wainwright. He's younger. But Adam, I do want to say that I did not take my era of hip-hop into account when I did this trivia challenge for you, and let's roll right into it.
I've never been more ready for a trivia challenge. I know you're so passionate about this, and I can't wait to fail it epically. Let's go.
Here's what you'll get: 5 trivia questions based on the episode's topic with varying degrees of difficulty. Each question is worth 1 point, so the top score for any round is 5 points. If you get stuck, you can ask for 1 hint per game. Even if you get all of the questions wrong, you can still win by answering the impossible question. Get that one right, and you will get all 5 points. But remember, even if you save your hint, there are no hints for the impossible bonus.
Wow, Ed. You think I'd heard that before, but I'm amazed anyway and ready to go.
Now, typically we start this off with a karaoke parody, but since we are doing hip hop and you and I are kind of battling, I put something together more in line with the theme of this episode.
Round one, fight! It's too late for you. You're already dead.
Damn. Like, I feel like I've been put to shame already. Like, this isn't fair.
I just figured I'd start off with a little battle theme music to get us going. But are you ready, Adam? Are you ready for your karaoke trivia bullpen?
I don't know how I could be any more ready after hearing that shit. Let's go.
So question one. You know I love comics, and you know our guest today loves comics too. Did you know there's a comic series devoted to hip-hop by Pittsburgh cartoonist Ed Pisker called Hip Hop Family Tree? If you haven't checked it out, I highly recommend it. But this question isn't covering the book. It's covering what the book covers, which is the history of hip-hop. Book one covers the years 1975 to 1983, back when it all began. Which pioneering DJ is credited as the godfather of hip-hop? Kicking things off in the 1970s through his Back to School Jam, hosted on August 11th, 1973, at 1520 Sedgwick Avenue, where he would isolate and repeat the breakdowns and records to encourage folks to keep dancing.
Grandmaster Flash.
I am sorry, it is DJ Kool Herc.
Okay. A couple names I was kicking around there, yep.
Yeah, I promise you that's the only one from my era.
Well, I mean, you can ask questions from your era, Ed. Like, I'm not unfamiliar with the era. Like, there's a lot of directions you could have taken that question that I would have been comfortable with. Like, the real birthplace of hip hop is in the Bronx.
Correct.
People will argue Brooklyn, and they're wrong.
They are wrong. But question two, maybe you'll do a little bit better at this one. This is the 90s. This trivia challenge started with a bit of a battle-centric theme, and battles are a big part of hip-hop culture. I could go into the stuff from my era, like the BDP and Juice Crew stuff, or LL Cool J versus Cool Moe Dee, but I figured I'd keep it in tune with the era you grew up in for this. Which rapper got into beef with LL Cool J when, in the song 4-3-2-1, he asked LL if he could borrow the mic on his arm in a verse that was later altered, which led LL to responding that, "The symbol on my arm is off limits to challengers. You hold the rusty swords, I swing the Excalibur." Fair warning, all of these multiple choice answers were featured on the song, but only one of these artists went on to produce a response track with Wyclef Jean and Mike Tyson. A. Method Man. B. Cannabis. C. Redman. D. DMX.
Oh, man. This is like apparently my era. I'm gonna guess DMX though.
It was Cannabis.
To be completely forthright, I don't know who Cannabis is.
That's okay. I don't think anyone remembers him these days either.
That's fair.
Question three. I have never hit one of these special events, and to my knowledge, neither have you. But there is a touring karaoke concert called Trap Karaoke, which celebrates hip hop culture and often has special guests like Cam'ron, Soulja Boy, Wale, and others. Founded in 2015 by Jason Moat, Trap Karaoke is a user-generated concert series that empowers fans to jump on stage, grab the mic, and perform their favorite trap anthems in front of an electric crowd of their peers. What southern city did trap music originate in? A. Atlanta, Georgia. B. Memphis, Tennessee. C. New Orleans, Louisiana. Or D. Tampa, Florida.
I'm going to use a hint here because I have it narrowed down, but I just want to see if we can get some clarification here.
I will strip out Memphis, Tennessee and Tampa, Florida.
Tampa was never in consideration there, buddy. You did exactly zero help for me because I had it narrowed down to Atlanta and New Orleans.
Oh, no.
I did. That's 100% true. Trap music, man, it has to be Atlanta.
You are correct. It is Atlanta, Georgia.
Okay, yeah. It's not quite the New Orleans sound. It's not quite, yeah. All right, good.
All right, 1 point.
One. I'm happy with that. We're good.
Speaking of comics and comics artists, and keeping with the hip-hop theme, Mark Texeira was a huge presence in the comic scene in the 1990s and 2000s. Many fans probably associate Tex with his long run on the reboot of Ghost Rider, but he also illustrated plenty of other books, including Moon Knight, Punisher, Wolverine, and Black Panther. Even though he was busy with comics in the 90s, that did not stop him from providing the artwork for this Long Island hip-hop group's 1994 album, Muse, Sick and Our Message.
I got nothing. I mean, Public Enemy.
You got it. One last bit on hip-hop, comics, and Ghost Rider.
Okay.
So that 1990s Ghost Rider series centered on a new person taking the Ghost Rider mantle, Danny Ketch. When the flame-skulled Spirit of Vengeance first appeared, the person he was tied to was stunt motorcyclist Johnny Blaze. Johnny Blaze is also one of the many aliases this Wu-Tang Clan member goes by, though quite possibly for different reasons. What's the name this rapper is best known as?
I'm going to pause the trivia for a second here. Let's have a discussion real quick. I don't know what you think my era of hip hop it is, but it's not the Wu-Tang Clan, man. Like, I've never listened to Wu-Tang. I never got into them. I don't know if I could, gun to my head, name a member of the Wu-Tang Clan. You can say you failed. There's a lot of other shit that I could talk very knowledgeably about and extensively about, but you managed to just completely dodge it. I don't know if I can name one member of Wu-Tang. I've never listened to Wu-Tang.
Not even Method Man?
But I've listened to Method Man. Like, I don't even make the association of Method Man with Wu-Tang. Because You're All I Need to Get By. Like, we could talk about that song all fucking day with Method Man.
It's all right, though, Adam. You got 2 points. You came by them honestly. You have a chance to come by all five honestly right now with the Impossible Bonus. In the past 6 episodes, our Impossible Bonus questions sampled a disparate array of sources. British diarists, ASMR, geography, acid jazz, mathematical physics, and lengthy songs. We often stray from music in this part of the game because we're trying to bring in a wide and surprising variety of topics and sources into our trivia challenges. And that's what's great about hip-hop and how it developed. DJs and producers often brought in a large amount of sometimes surprising samples, connecting the music to the past and carrying musical heritage forward. One of the reasons you won't find De La Soul's classic album 3 Feet High and Rising on music streaming services is because of the licensing cost of all the samples in the album, which range from James Brown to Johnny Cash to Liberace. To get this question right, you'll need to give me two things: the name of the legendary producer of this album and the amount of samples that Discogs tracked down in the album.
I don't know who the producer of the album is. I'll guess at the other one though, because it's a number and you can just randomly guess at numbers. So, and they're like right, like what, like 90% of the time? That's how numbers work. I'm going to say there were 69 different samples.
You were so close. Prince Paul was the producer for 3 Feet High and Rising.
Yeah.
And it was 67 samples.
I can't believe I was that close on even a random guess.
Your homework now is to track down all 67 samples and report back to me.
I will not be doing that, but I appreciate the effort, Ed. I love the questions. I feel like I learned some stuff today and I have some homework to do on my own. Even if you vastly misunderstood what my era of hip hop would be.
I just assumed it was the 90s.
There was aspects of the 90s, yes, but like, you didn't ask one question about my favorite like region of hip hop. Like, I love Chicago, but the Chicago sound, the sound that like came out of Chicago. Like, ask me about Common, ask me about Kanye. There's so many different ways you could have gone about this. And you asked me questions about like shit that I thought for sure you're going to ask me about some of the songs that you sing at karaoke.
That's fair, because we do a lot of hip hop at karaoke.
We do. But it's a mistake for everybody to do it.
It really is. Why is it a mistake, Adam?
Because, listen, y'all, and I have seen just evidence of this time and time again, is that people don't understand how difficult it is to do hip hop at karaoke. If you can't hit the meter of the song, if you don't know it, like, it's incredibly difficult to pick these things up. You can fake your way through songs. You can't fake your way through a meter in a hip-hop song.
Melody is much more forgiving than rhythm. Much more forgiving.
Yes. Yes. And you just can't make that up when you sit there and look at it. Like, you can't, you should have some familiarity with it. I know we stray and say you don't need to be familiar with a song, but like, man, for hip-hop, it's tough. You try doing Rap God without knowing Rap God, good luck.
Indeed. I mean, these are songs you should not need the screen for if you're going to do them. That's my advice always when doing rap at karaoke. If you need the screen, you maybe shouldn't do it.
Maybe. I would argue that if you have a little bit of a familiarity with the song and you maybe just need some help with the words, you can understand the rhythm of the song and you can understand the intricacies, because the same way that singers will hit high and low notes, rappers do that with their rhythm. Like, it's never consistent the entire way through. Like, very rarely are they looking to hypnotize you with the thing. So you're going to have variations in the rhythm. If you don't understand the variations, the vocal variations that they're inflicting, I think Lil Wayne does this really well. He'll settle into a certain thing, but he'll work inflections in and differences and like switch his rhythm a little bit, where he's working more syllables into this particular section than the other section. And if you don't know when those things are coming, then you're going to fall apart on stage. You're going to feel bad. The audience is going to feel awkward. Like, it's just not good.
And also, just don't do it ironically.
Yeah.
Like, don't get up there and just say words.
No, why would you? Ed, why would anybody do that? Tell me, why would anybody do that?
Because people are assholes, Adam, and I've seen it happen on more than one occasion. Let me also say this. We are a living cliche, Adam and I. We are two middle-aged white best friends with a podcast. So as much as either of us may or may not know about hip-hop, we are certainly not experts. But there is one thing I know that Adam will agree with me on. And if you are also a white guy of any age range, there's probably a word that you should skip when doing certain songs. And by probably, I mean you fucking should.
If we have to say what this word is too, you're a fucking asshole. Don't listen to our podcast. Sorry. Sorry, not sorry. We don't need you to be listening to it if you're going to argue with us on this point, or if you don't know what word we're referring to. Like, just don't listen to us, because I don't care about you. Just straight up. It bothers me I have to discuss this, Ed. it really does. It bothers me. We have to even have this conversation and put this into the ether and really clarify this about karaoke. But we do. And we do it because we've been to karaoke nights where some privileged white motherfucker walks up there and just throws this word around like it's nothing. Like it doesn't have any kind of context or meaning or deep historical meaning. And it doesn't like, God damn it. I'm struggling to articulate myself right now.
And this is just my honest advice. Maybe you think you're one of those dudes who has a pass when you're with your friends, but I guarantee you that not everybody in that bar is your friend.
Even if you think you have a pass with your friends, that doesn't apply to everybody. It's the way you can joke around with your friends. You should just as a person acknowledge that not every joke you say with your friends is going to fly with strangers that you're around. And this is just being empathetic to everybody's struggles and understanding and acknowledging everybody has different boundaries with language, with culture, with physicality. Like, just be a good person. There's alternatives to that word. And you can still deliver a great hip-hop performance that includes that word without using that word. Find a word that has similar syllables. Like, work it in there. Do that. Anything but use that word.
Now, Adam, let's take it on a positive tip. What do you think are some great songs for doing hip hop and karaoke?
I'm going to kick it off. I'm going to say Bust a Move by Young MC is an underrated one that is, every time I've done it, it's a guaranteed banger.
Yeah, I feel
guaranteed
you.
Every single time.
I think a lot of it depends on the median age of who's in the bar because
I don't think it does. I think that one really transcends. From my experience singing that song, because this is one of the ones that's in my karaoke rotation that I know by heart that I can stray and do my thing around the bar with and sing to people. I think it sets the right tone and atmosphere for a party atmosphere that people can dance to and that they can pick up on it by the third time that the chorus rolls around.
Yeah.
You know, the you want it, you got it. Like, even if you don't know the song, it has such a hook to it that by the third time that hook rolls around, everybody in the bar can be singing that hook. And they'll know exactly what it is. It's easy to pick up. It's easy to dance to. If the person that's singing knows what they're doing, like it can really set the tone for a night. I love that song. I really do. I think that's a good one.
Yeah, same. That one's a lot of fun. I will kick it back to the first song that I think I did with you at karaoke when I did Just a Friend by Biz Markie, because I could nail the rap part and I couldn't sing worth a damn. So it was the perfect song for me. But like nowadays, maybe Hotline Bling. I mean, that one always seems to get a crowd going. I don't really like Drake, but
I don't like Drake either. That's what I was to say. Like, what are, like, I'm trying to think of some modern songs, like some modern hip hop that would really get a crowd going.
I'm still looking to do the Kendrick part to Bad Blood by Taylor Swift with somebody.
Oh, yeah. Man, like, we'll have a separate discussion offline, Ed, about Kendrick Lamar, because I think he may be the most gifted rapper in the game today.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. Now, what about songs that you think might be surprisingly difficult? I don't mean like Eminem's Rap God or Slow Jams by Twista. I mean, like, what do you think would surprise somebody by how difficult it is?
Why don't you give me what you're thinking here, Ed?
For me, it's Naughty by Nature, because Tretch's flow is just severe and dangerous, the way he'll double and triple up on a beat.
That's fair. Are we working on the context that somebody knows the song or they don't know the
song? I'm going under the context that somebody knows the song, because I don't think anyone's going to bust out Twista if they don't know it.
Well, nobody's going to bust out Twista, but I'm saying like songs that could like sneak up on you where you're like, oh, I've heard that shit once. Like I can sing that, you know, like that's what I'm trying to think of right now. Most of the shit by Tribe would sneak up on you. One of my favorite Tribe Called Quest songs that I haven't been able to do at karaoke is Excursions. And I think that would just murder someone. It has this like just a simple beat to it. But like the way that they adjust their rhythm and the way that continuously flows without a hook, I think could really throw you off. Any hip hop song that omits a hook, I think would be a pretty bad nightmare at karaoke, honestly. Especially if you weren't super familiar with it and you didn't know the hook. Also, a Childish Gambino, I feel like, has a feel like this, specifically the song Freaks and Geeks, because he switches up his tempo so much. But I think it could fuck with somebody in a major way where he starts a certain way, but like works in inflections and meanings. And like there's a lot of double meaning and twisting words. I think Little Dicky's another one, too. I think if you tried to do Professional Rapper by Little Dicky at karaoke, I feel like there's enough variation in everything that goes on there that it could create some issues, even though it's technically just a conversation that he's having with the Snoop D-O-double-G.
And then lastly, Adam, what would you love to find at karaoke that you haven't found yet?
I would fucking kill to do They Reminisce Over You by CL Smooth and Pete Rock. I knew that song like the back of my fucking hand. You want to talk about a song I would murder at karaoke? I don't even need karaoke version at this point. Give me that fucking beat and I will give you a TROY. 100% like the back of my fucking hand, hands down, that would be my shit right there. The other one that I'm sure exists at karaoke, but for some reason I haven't seen it or haven't actively looked at it, is Children's Story by Slick Rick.
That's a good one. Yeah.
I'm always going to be attracted to storytellers, and that's just storytelling.
For me, it's actually going back to the verses that we talked about, I think, previously on this. I would love to see more KRS-One or Big Daddy Kane. Those would make my night. If I saw that in a karaoke book, I'd be like, well, I know what I have to do.
Oh, another one. I haven't seen Alphabet Aerobics out there yet either, and I'd love to try that at karaoke.
Oh, that would be so tough. That would be so good, though.
It would be so tough. It would be so good. And the only reason I really want to try it is because I saw fucking Daniel Radcliffe do it. And if Daniel Radcliffe can do it, I like to think I can do it.
That's fair. You are taller.
I am taller, but I'm not fucking Harry Potter, Ed. The dude's just magical at this point.
Right.
And rarely in an actor do you get, listen, I'm one of the most iconic fictional characters of all time, but there's also a good chance that if you went and saw me in the theater, you saw my dick. Like, it's a rare combination of the two with Daniel Radcliffe. He brings two worlds together in a very unique way.
That he does. Adam, do you have any final thoughts on hip hop at karaoke before we talk to Young Deuces of the Geek Set podcast?
Don't do it. Don't do it if you don't know the song. Don't use the word that you know you shouldn't use. But if you do love hip hop and you want to try it out, don't be afraid to. Like, I fucking love doing hip hop and karaoke. I really do.
It can make a night very fun.
It can. Do you have any final thoughts?
No, I'd rather us just talk to our new friend and expert, Young Deuces. How does that sound to you?
Man, I can't wait to do that because this dude is doing some shit that is rad as hell with the people from the Geek Set podcast. So let's just cue the guitar and roll right into it. If you heard our episode with Douglas Wolk, you know that we've got a strong nerd streak in us. And if you listen to any episode of our show before, you know that we love hip hop and that it is an important part of our personal karaoke songbooks. Well, today we've got a guest who combines the love of geek culture and hip hop in his podcast, Geek Set, where he and his pals, Bacardi, Lib, and Dij, hit on all matters of hip hop and nerd cultures. And he's currently crowdfunding for his documentary, The Black Geek Documentary. Young Deuces, welcome to the greatest song ever sung poorly.
Man, thank you guys for having me, man. I love the concept of this podcast so much. And so I'm excited to be here.
And we did not pay him to say that.
No, not this time. Not this time. You know, the feeling's neutral, though. Like, I love the concept of your podcast, which we're going to talk about a little bit more. But I checked it out. I adore the concept of your podcast. But the first thing we like to hit our guests with is we need to know the background. Okay. So we talk about karaoke here. We're going to dig into it a little bit more. Tell us a little bit about your experience with karaoke we like to phrase it as your karaoke origin story.
Oh, yeah. No. So, you know, 4 scores and 7 years ago. No. So, you know, just like most people with karaoke, it really started with family. So, you know, family would get together and, you know, they have whether it's a barbecue or birthday or whatnot. And then at some point, somebody's going to start like a sing-along and everything. And the reason why I say it starts with family because those sing-alongs a lot of the times are really karaoke, even if we're not prefacing it as karaoke. But this is, you know, because you'll have that one cousin or aunt or uncle who, like, this is their song, and they kind of, you know, so there's like, you know, you got to let them have their moment. So like, that's like generally like where my origins start. But as far as like official karaoke, it's definitely bars, you know, going out, hey, hanging out with friends or going on Milwaukee got a huge college scene. And, you know, especially, you know, Milwaukee's also a huge beer scene. So being born and raised in Milwaukee, that was a constant with those bars. And I just love the energy. I love being able to be in a place where everybody is there to have fun, which I, you know, we'll get into it. But the karaoke scene and the comic book conventions, there's some similarities in regards to it. Because the one thing that I love about karaoke is that this is not America's Got Talent. This is not, you know, it's not Star Search. So it's like, it's not about being the best voice at karaoke. It's more about like, are you throwing your all in it? Are you having fun? And are you like, what type of performance are you putting? So, yeah. So my origin is definitely that. It's definitely bars, you know, and singing Journey. That's always the go-to.
Nice. Yeah.
What is it that you love about karaoke? Because we talked about that a little bit before we got started recording today.
Yep. So I love the inclusivity. Like, I love that, like, no matter what walk of life that you are from, people accept you, you know, because, and the reason why I say it's mirror comic book convention, in comic book conventions, there's a lot of cosplays, right? And whether you are a person who spends thousands of dollars on your cosplay or you just put together a cosplay 2 hours before the convention, you're going to get the same amount of love, respect. Okay. People are going to recognize, oh, that's, I know where that's from. And so I feel like that the same thing with karaoke. A song can come on that you know you have to be a very good vocal talent. And if you're not a vocal talent, nobody's going to look at you like, oh, you're butchering the song. No, they're going to look at you like, yep, I'm going to sing along and I'm going to sing off key with you. And I love that because I feel like it's taking the seriousness out of it. And it's pure fun. And so that's what I love about karaoke so much.
Now, do you do cosplay yourself?
So I am embarking on a cosplay journey. Within our collective, Bacardi is our resident cosplayer. So he cosplays all the time. I like to collect like masks and everything. So for my nerds here who's watching it, one of my favorite villains is Deathstroke. He has a really badass mask. Like, his mask is like really, 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 really vicious. And so I got that mask and I generally use that mask. And then I said, you know what? I want to get the full suit. I want to do the full Deathstroke cosplay. So I'm piecing it bit by bit, piece by piece, and I'm going on that journey for it.
Man, that's a heck of a journey right there. The things you're talking about is what we love about karaoke. That's the spirit we're trying to instill in this podcast, that karaoke is for everybody. You know, it's inclusive and we don't give a shit how you sound. We don't care what you look like when you're up there, but it's just joy that you're experiencing in a room. And like, man, that's too rare nowadays. It just really is. That out of the way. Give me how you grade a karaoke performance. Like, there's a difference between getting somebody to get up there and enjoy, but you know when somebody steps up there and rips it. Like, for Deuces, what's an ideal karaoke performance? What is out of the park, the best you can possibly do?
Well, the first thing that I graded off of is commitment. It's like, again, like I said, you don't have to be the best vocal talent, but are you committed to trying to perform something, right? Like, are you committed to the song that you are singing? And then the second one, it is, I get to the performance aspect. Like, you know, if you're going to sing, if you're doing a ballad, I want the sways. If you're singing a song that got the energy, I need the hands. I need all of that. I need that energy in my karaoke. So that stage presence is the second thing that I'm grading it off of. And then, you know, the third one, I'm just like creativity. Like, okay, what are you doing that's outside? Because, you know, sometimes you'll get the person who's going to jump off the stage. You're going to get the person who's going to sing in your face. And it's, you know, so it's like, I'm looking at that performance, like, how are you commanding that stage? And then are you having fun? Like, you know, that's the last thing. So those are my four pillars. But when I'm grading a good karaoke is that, you know, I want how, you know, are you committed? You know, are you giving a good performance? Is there any type of creative aspect and how much fun you're having?
It sounds like a chapter on our future book, Ed, right here. Like the four pillars, the four pillars of a karaoke performance. Like you just did the work for us there.
I think Deuces would have liked that time I was down in Cape Coral, Florida, and I put in, it was like a really great live party crowd. So I put in Let Me Clear My Throat by DJ Kool.
Oh my God.
And their track froze. And the guy said, while I was doing it, he's like, do you want me to find like a different version? I'm like, no, I got this. And I'm just walking around the bar. There's no screen to help me out. And I'm like, no, I got this. And I did all that crowd work. And then I had drinks bought for me, which was always a lot of fun.
That's how you know you killed it. That's how you know you killed it.
I mean, because I love hip hop. Adam loves hip hop. You love hip hop. What era of stuff did you grow up with? And who do you love now?
So I did grow up that what they call the golden era of hip hop. So, which also, side note, I had a conversation on another podcast. 90s to me, like late 80s, 90s to me is the best era of music in every genre. I feel like we got some really good pop, really good rock, really good country, really good hip hop. Like, I feel like everybody was just given so much greatness and it shaped a lot of my childhood. My favorite era of hip hop would probably be like mid 90s, late 90s, because the one thing that I love about, like, when I listen to hip hop, I appreciate the diversity of it, right? So like, I appreciate the really introspective lyricism of like a Rakim or a Nas, mm-hmm. or, you know, Talib Kweli, Wu-Tang, like, you know, that era. But I can also love, you know, like the creativity-ness of like a Busta Rhymes or the melodies of like Nelly or like, you know, so like I have a good, I'm a student of the game. I really love hip hop. But my as far as my favorite eras, as far as albums, and I think it's due to the digital era where it lost a little bit of flair, because I still love hip hop so much now. But the one thing that I used to love in that mid-90s, late 90s, was going to the CD store, buying the CD, opening up the package, reading the lyrics, looking at the composers, the writers. Like, I think that booklet was so much. And then, you know, we used to have the CD wallets. So like I put a lot of times in, like, the word is curating now, but I put a lot of time in curating my CD wallet where it was like, okay, this page is going to be all of like Rockefeller and Jay-Z, but I'm going to have the album cover booklet behind it. So it's like, when you looking through my book, I feel like that we don't have that no more in the digital era. And I feel like even though music is still good, that connection, that experience, that whole, what, like, whatever it was, you know, that whole moment that you created with that album. And then also with Apple Music and Spotify, we have so much access to music. I feel like albums come and go. Where at that time, when you spend $15, $16 at Sam Goody, and yes, I did say Sam Goody.
Oh, yeah.
You spend that time buying that CD. That CD probably stayed in your car or your boombox for weeks until you got another CD. So it was like you had more moments and memories with those albums. And I just, that at that time for me, it just can't be recreated.
I think Ed and I felt that to our very core, everything you just said there. Like, because I do remember that. I remember, like, having the cases, like, stored under the seat so nobody could see it and steal it and stuff like that, putting the tracks behind it. And, like, having attached to that, those albums. My first hip-hop album that I owned, this is before Ed exposed me to a lot, and this was very early on, as, like, 12, 13 years old or something like that. I owned Tag Team's album.
Oh my God.
Whoop, there it is.
Yes.
That was my first hip hop album. And I still remember one of the full verses from a track on that called Wreck the Set.
Yep.
Yeah. I still remember a full verse from that. And I can't get it out of my head because the attachment I had to that album, like that thing was in there constantly. And yeah. Okay. I'm talking about Tag Team. I would love to have it.
Well, hold on. Before we move on, Whoop, There It Is a great karaoke song.
Oh, it is. Oh, nobody ever busts it out anymore.
Yeah. That is an amazing karaoke song.
Nobody ever busts that out anymore. Maybe it's because, like, okay, so let's cross this bridge right now. Hip-hop and karaoke, okay?
Yep.
It's tough, and I think it's a lot tougher than people really understand or give it credit for. So what are some missteps you see when people are trying to pull it off the karaoke?
So one of the missteps, and it's weird because it works in every other genre except hip-hop. In every other genre, if you bust out your favorite song, most likely it's a good karaoke favorite song, right? But in hip-hop, those B-side records, it's like a lot of the times they don't translate on the karaoke stage, right? So I think that's the misconception. People's like, oh, I want to pick this song, it's my favorite song. When in reality, when you do hip-hop, you do kind of you got to have that performer's mindset a little bit. You got to be like, okay, what is a song, a universal song that I know, like, you know, the crowd would be able to get rallied behind? Because, you know, with hip hop, there's a couple of elements. One of the elements of hip hop is just like showcasing like vocal and verbal talent, right? But it was like, okay, yeah, this is a good song and it's very impressive if you can recite these lyrics, but it's not a good karaoke song, because one of the elements of karaoke also is people singing along. So it's like, that's where I think a lot of people, you know, it makes it harder for hip hop to translate into karaoke.
I absolutely agree with you. One of the mistakes I often see is people who are like, oh, I can't sing, but I can rap. It's just talking. And then it comes on and you are treated to the worst Baby Got Back that you've ever seen in your entire fucking life.
The worst Juicy you've ever heard in your entire life. That's another one.
But that's why I say it goes into commitment, because it's like, okay, if you're just going to read it, then it's not like, you know, I think with karaoke is one of the only genres that you can mock somebody's cadence and it's a-okay. Because like, if I do Juicy or if I do a good hip hop karaoke song is Notorious Big, It Was All a Dream.
Oh yeah.
But if you listen to anybody recite that song, you hear them kind of try to sound like Biggie Smalls. Everybody always goes, it was all a dream. They try to use that voice. Very rarely do you hear people say it was all a drink. Like they try to throw their verse. And I feel like that's one thing about karaoke that's accepted is like, you know, if I'm going to sound like Freddie Mercury, I'm going to try to throw it. Even it's going to be a horrible version of Freddie Mercury, but I'm going to try. And you know, but it's appreciated in there. So it's like, yeah, that's the thing about like rap. Don't read the lyrics. You got to perform it.
Absolutely. What can someone do to absolutely kill a rap song in karaoke for you?
With rap songs, you got to have some familiarity with it. Because one of the things about like rap is that certain words get certain influxes like in the voice, right? So going back to even with the Juicy, right? If you read the lyrics, it was all a dream. I used to read World Up magazine, right? It's like, it doesn't hit unless you got to hold that dream. It was all a dream. Like you got to have that. Dun-dun-dun-dun. So it's like, if you don't know the song, then you're not hitting those points, those punches that need it. And so that's one of the things that you really need to at least know that cadence and be able to hit those punches.
Yeah, and it comes in, I think that's almost universally with hip-hop. And I think that's the biggest mistake I see, too, is not understanding the cadence, because everything's just like, every rapper especially has like a little bit of a different cadence to their voice or a way to the attack or approach a song. Like Lil Wayne's going to sound infinitely different than Jay-Z. Like they're two different like way they attack a song and approach a song.
The thing I always say is that your natural inclination is to clap on the one and the three and a half. Maybe don't try it.
But it goes back to what Ed said, because you said when people are just reading the lyrics, because like even if you think about just like other like songs that people sing along or whatever like that, right? You know, you think about Sweet Caroline. You know, if you don't know that tone and you're just saying if you're not holding the Sweet Caroline, like if you're not doing that. Mm-hmm. Right. It's not going to hit, you know, so it's like I think because people think rap is just, I just say words. They think that you don't have to have cadence, and you do.
I think you need to have cadence more in rap than just about any other thing, because like so much of it relies on the cadence. Like you can mask a bad cadence with a good note sometimes. But if your cadence is off with rap, then it's out the window. OK, so we're going to put that aside a little bit, because I want to talk a little bit about Geek Set.
OK.
Because I was geeking out over Geek Set earlier today with that. Okay.
Listen, nice,
I tuned it up, was listening. I was like, I was geeking out. I love the chemistry you guys have. I love what you're doing for the culture. Can you just tell me a little bit, how did Geek Set get started? Where are you guys at now? What's next?
So the one thing about Geek Set the basis before we actually started to formulate it was that we were all loving of the culture, anime, comic books, video games, and everything like that. Right. And so we, kind of like how we are with, you know, with music, like we were historians of it. We watched it. We put in 1,000 hours. Like we know the culture, right? And so we would watch all these different properties, Comic Book Man, Comic Historian, like all these people, and we love them because they give us the knowledge, they give us the history, they give us the insight. But the one thing that we realized was like, man, you know what? The way that we talk about it, we're not seeing that on TV. We're not hearing that on podcasts. And the way that we talk about it, it's a constant joke. Or like one of those, if you know, in like Black culture, is that barbershop talk, the way that you hear barbershops and you're that, and like, especially when we're on sports, right? And so we often use the joke, like when you hear Black people debate Batman versus Superman, it sounds like in the barbershop debating LeBron versus Michael Jordan. It's that passion. It's that yelling. It's, you know, and it's funny because it's like, you know, if you don't know of that culture, use them in LeBron versus Jordan. You'll hear somebody, you know, they'll say like one of the things that, and it's not even a disrespect, but one of the things in Black culture, and it kind of mirrors kind of like, I would say Italian culture. You'll hear somebody say something, a take like, oh man, LeBron is 100% better than Jordan. And then you'll hear somebody out the back like, man, get the fuck out of here, man. You crazy, right? And so now people's like, you know, it sounds so passionate, but it was like, but it's still respect. Nobody took offense and everything, but it's like, it's that passion. So I was like, I want to bring that to the podcast. I mean, to geek culture. I want people to hear us talk passionately about Dragon Ball Z and Naruto and everything. But the moment that really catapulted, because I listen to a lot of podcasts and all these geek shows, when Black Panther was coming out, a hip hop group by the name of Run the Jewels. For a lot of people, if you don't know who Run the Jewels is, it's pretty much like a grassroots hip hop group. Their song was on the first commercial for Black Panther. And for hip hop culture, I'm like, yo, this is crazy. This is Disney. This is Marvel. This is Black Panther. And they're using Run the Jewels in their commercial. But no other podcast I heard talked about the importance of that. And I said, see, that's what's missing. We need to be the bridge to show, you know, to link that, because a lot of the roots of hip hop and a lot of the roots of geek culture mirror each other. Like both cultures were, you know, was seemingly talked about and chastised. Of both cultures had some toxicity in it. Both cultures are now some of the most dominant cultures in the world today. It seems like everything, no matter what, has either a graphic novel or a comic book base and has some type of hip hop elements in it, whether it's the way they talk, whether it's the music within it, the visuals. It's funny because I made a Facebook post. I said, man, I want to do this podcast. And it's like, you know, about geek culture and hip hop culture. And Bacardi actually got tagged in it. Now, in Milwaukee, in our hip hop scene, I know Bacardi because he's a producer in Milwaukee. And so, and I do music as an artist. So it was like, oh, okay, I already know Bacardi. And then Lib, also a producer in the city, I work with him as well. And he was like, I'm down. And I know that he's a comic book head because his first album that he did was called The Wade Wilson Project. For those who know who Wade Wilson is, it's Deadpool. So I was like, okay. I was like, you know what? I'm going to go with these three, because the one thing that I didn't want is I didn't want to have to go through the woes of learning a new host. Right. You know, having to build that relationship on screen as we go. I was like, I know these two, so we can, you know, kick off running. So we got together that night. I made the post. We made some steaks, drunk some whiskey, and we kind of figured out like how we're going to do this. And then we came up with the Geek Set podcast, the only podcast that blend hip hop culture and geek culture together. And the evolution of it has been so amazing because, you know, like I said, we've been in with these culture as long as we can remember, but we didn't really have a name for it. And then the term blurred started popping up, and I didn't know what blurred was. And it's essentially a black nerd. So as I started looking into what blurred is and what a black nerd, I said, wow, this is me. This is who I am. And you remember that moment in Black Panther at the end where that kid sees T'Challa and he's back in the United States and he's not at Wakanda and he's like, who are you? And he sees the ship and it's kind of like that awakening, like, oh my God, like this is much more bigger than what I thought. And like, you see the potential of what you can be as a kid. I felt that with blurred culture. When I realized what blurred was and the culture was, it was like an awakening, like, oh, whoa, look at this. This is this whole tribe. This is this whole group of people here that I can relate to. That is just amazing. And then it became a badge. It became something that I wore with pride. And it was like, this is us, right? We are blurred culture. And then we just wanted to make sure that we did the culture justice. So we made sure that we operated with morals. We operated at a high standard and started putting together different shows and different content and everything. And just started elevating, started going to conventions, started being on the scene, started to try to make sure that we can push the culture in a positive way.
I love it. You guys have had some great guests on your show too. Who were some of your favorites and what did you learn from them?
One of my favorites, definitely Jay Ellis. He plays Lawrence in Insecure. We was able to interview him at the height of his of Insecure. During the final season, everybody wants it. But what I loved about it is, and this is what it kind of is the whole essence of what Geek Set is. Everybody has some geek in them, right? Everybody does. But a lot of the times, and you know, growing up in the 90s and, you know, in school, a geek was kind of, you got talked about, you know, it was like, oh, nerd. You know, it was like, that was the thing, but it was like, we all had that. And that's what I realized. I was like, now we're in a space where it's all about inclusivity and it's about love. So when I interviewed Jay Ellis and I was like, I know everybody's going to want to talk about this final season. And yes, we did talk about his final season. It was cool. And we had that moment. But one of the greatest moments that I loved is that we spent like 25 minutes talking about his favorite comic book, what comic book character that he would like. And this is where I was like, oh, he's a real nerd, because you talk to people about your favorite comic book character, they're going to say the big names. Oh, I love Superman, Batman, Spider-Man. He went and he said, yo, Blue Beetle is one of my favorites. And I said, wait, you know about Blue Beetle? Because I was like, oh, no, you in the thick of it. But I was like, nowhere else. Any interview, you can search any interview, he has not talked about how his love for comic books. He have not talked about his love for anime. He have not talked about identifying himself as a blur and how, you know, it's like, you know, yeah, I see Steve Urkel and I respect Steve Urkel, but that's not the portrayal who I am. There's other nerds, because that's the issue with media right now. And one of the reasons why we're doing the documentary, and we'll talk about it later, but one of the reasons why we wanted to embark on this journey is that, like, when you see media portray not even just Black nerds, nerds in general, they always make nerds the butt of the jokes. They always make us the ones who can't get the guy or the girl. They always make us socially awkward. And it's like, no, there's a lot of people that's just like, you know, that's just, you know, cool people as well that are nerds. There's people, like, there's all walks of life, and we wanted to show that. So it's like, I got this A-list actor talking about being a blur, and I was like, this is amazing. Like, this is amazing. But then on the retrospect, being able to talk to some of our legends, so, you know, Phil Lamar and Deborah Wilson and what they've done for the blur community, and Rachel True's, like, being able to talk to them and for them to see it, for me to be able to timeline with them when there wasn't no blurred culture being accepted, to now the explosion of it, and being able to hear from them, like, yeah, when back then I was the only one, or it felt like I was the only one. And now seeing this, I love it. So it was like, those are some of my favorite ones, because it was like, it's the essence of what Geekset is. It's like, let's celebrate our heroes while they're here, and let's uncover certain people, you know. And I always love when I do an interview and I have a moment where somebody goes, wait, what? You know, it's like, because even talking to people who are from, you know, London, England, I was fortunate enough to interview Abubakar Salim for Raised by Wolves fans. He plays Father, right? And so I'm talking to him, obviously Raised by Wolves, amazing show. It's a nerded out show. It's all about sci-fi. I got Ridley Scott, you know, for freaking sake. Like, this is a nerd show. And I'm talking to him and I was like, hey, do you know about the term blur? And he's like, no. And I was like, oh. And on screen, that moment that I told you that kid had with T'Challa, on screen, in my interview, he had that moment about blurred culture. And I said, this is it. This is exactly what I was like. I'm having that moment. He had that moment where he's like, oh my God, I'm a blur. I didn't even know this. And he was like, I'm about to research all this. And I was just like, yo, this is beautiful. Like, I love those moments, being able to have stuff like that. So those are some of my favorite guests that we've had.
I love that you're creating this space on the internet. Just straight up. I love the fact that you all are creating this space in the internet, because it's so unbelievably important. And the things you're talking about are so, like, impactful and beautiful, and like bringing people, like, man, like I love the entire, I really do. I love this concept. I think it's super important. So that's why I want to talk a little bit about, okay, you mentioned briefly about the Black Geek documentary, which you're currently working on crowdfunding. How did you get started on this project? Tell us a little bit about it.
So this has always been something that was in the back of my head, because I'm a fan of documentaries. I love a good documentary. But I was always like, man, I would love to do something that's about this culture, right? And we're really formulated. I'm all about collaborating, like, all about working with as many people, because I love to, you know, amplify people's voices. I love to empower people. I love that whole process. So where it really got pushed full force was during Black History Month. And I keep on telling this story, and I want to make sure I preface it. This is not a dig at BuzzFeed at all, because I love a lot of stuff that BuzzFeed put together. But one of the things I was looking at, I was searching up, like, the simple videos, what does Black History Month mean to you? And I saw that BuzzFeed did one, and I was like, oh, that's dope that they did it. But I was like, huh, why hasn't any Black company did a what does Black History Month mean to you? And I was searching. I said, I didn't see. I saw, like, BuzzFeed. I saw, like, JK News doing stuff. Like, I saw a lot of YouTube channels that I love, that I watch. But I was just like, I would love to also see, you know, a Black ran one, right? And I said, well, why don't we do it? And so what we did was, for Black History Month this year, we reached out to 30 blurs across the world, and we asked them three simple questions. What does Black History Month mean to you? What makes you proud to be Black? And then word association, when you hear Black History Month and blurred culture, what's the first thing that comes to mind? And we put together this video, and it was so dope to me, because I was like, yo, look at all these people that come from the same walk of life, but it's all over the globe. Like, we all, you know, we talk about Black History Month and how it was taught to us as kids. We talked about being a nerd and being a Black nerd and what it means to us. We talked about, you know, Black History Month plus blurred culture, putting it together. What's the first thing to come to mind? And we had some funny, crazy conversations around that. But I was like, I like this. This is something that I want to do. But I realized that it's like, we don't have anything that officially timelined everything. And I said, let's put it together. And I was like, you know, most of my interviews we've done through Zoom. And I said, I want to do this for real, though. I want this to be a full feature documentary that we can take to film festivals and we can pitch to streaming services. So we started calling it A Love Letter to the Blurred Culture, because it's for the blurred culture, by the blurred culture. You know, it's ran by blurs, and we've gained the trust and the support for the blurred community. But it's also, we're going to film it at a Black owned soundstage. Our director is going to be Black. Shout out to Brandon Champ Robinson, who's our director that's in it. And the way that we're working on this documentary is like, we're including all these other people involved with it. As far as like, if we can't get you on screen talent, you know what? You can help us out with the research. You can help us out with gathering B-roll. So now it's not only just a Geek Set thing. It's like, oh, Geek Set plus this podcast or this host and this. And then like a lot of the people that we've already interviewed also agreed to be on screen talent. So now the way that we've been pitching it, because even though we are crowdsourcing it, we have been taking meetings with some studios to try to see if they're like, if they can eventually, if they choose to fund it, then like we'll find something else to do with the people who have already, you know, helped us with the crowdfund. So we're just trying to figure out how we can get this to the people in the best way. I've been telling everybody, like, I'm really excited to see the credits. I'm really excited to be able to tell somebody like, hey, we used you. You are in that credit. So when you see it, I want to make sure that you know that. Like, I'm really excited about people seeing themselves in the light and opening that door, because eventually, you know, I want Geek Set to be like a BuzzFeed or a SourceFed, how it was back in the day, where it's like Geek Set is the brand. But look at all these other talented individuals that we are amplifying with different shows and stuff that they're doing on different platforms. I want to be able to bring that hub of doing that. And the one thing that is a commonality and why I think that this documentary is going to be very important is that even though it's called the Black Geek Documentary, we can't tell the history without talking about how, you know, how much we love Japanese animation culture, how much we love nerd culture in general, and those stripes. So it's like, this is Black versus white or Black versus, this is like, we're just telling our story, but we're not X-ing out the story, because like I said, I quoted Kevin Smith from Comic Book Men. That is high tier. Like, we love Kevin Smith. We love Feige. We love John Favreau. It's a lot of people that we love that, you know, may not be a Black geek, but it's like, we cannot talk about being a geek without highlighting these people, you know, highlighting Stan Lee, highlighting the people, you know, from other cultures, you know, Toriyama, who does Dragon Ball Z. Like, there's people from other cultures. So it's like, it's still a love thing. And I think that the one thing that is really great about this documentary and going on this journey is that the other properties don't feel like it's excluding them. You know, like I said, I got a chance to interview a Comic Store. And as you guys see, I like to make sure I say names and references. It helps, you know, fuel who he is. Comic Storian is a person who he dramatically reads comic books. And I love it, because it's like, if you don't have the means to read a comic book, you can play him like a podcast and you can still get it, because he goes in with the characters and everything. And I love his channel for that. And I use it a lot to get my history. So it's like, even that moment of saying like, hey, I just want to let you know, we referenced it, and let him know how much that we referenced it. And, you know, hey, we're going to include bits and pieces of it. So like, his name will be in the credits. It's like, I love that. It's like, even though it's a Black geek documentary, we're also including the geek community and the Japanese animation community, because it's like, it's very important to our makeup. So it's like, it became that love letter of, let's timeline it. Let's talk about how it felt being a kid and seeing Black Power Rangers, Steve Urkel, Static Shock, and that representation of, you know, of being a Black geek. But then also talking about how we feel like, why do we always get the same tropes? Why are we always socially awkward? But then also talking about now how we're changing that narrative, how we got people that are working with Netflix, Black animated studios, Black voiceover actors. And then talking about the future, where it's going, how things have evolved, how now we have a blurred con and a blurred fest. It's like, we have actual specific stuff that are in. So we want to be able to do all of that, but also have our heroes and have the people that are moving and shaking today a part of this documentary, talking about their journey. And I think it's going to be something that's going to be very, very dope, you know, because again, like I said, I love documentaries, and the feel and the theme that we want to go with is kind of like the toys that made us. And the movies that made it's like, how it's like, it's a good documentary, but it has some fun elements to it. because I don't want this to be a super serious one. As you guys can see, I like to have fun. I like the joke. I want that. I want people to be able to watch this documentary, learn, laugh, get introduced to new people, and have awakenings. That's my whole goal for this documentary.
Deuces, you're nothing but love. And I love that. I really do. And like everything you're talking about is super important. And man, I'm super excited for this project and everything else you got going on, because I definitely think you have a space in the world, and that not only have a space to do this, but the space that you're inhabiting is so incredibly important. And it just doesn't exist yet. And it's exciting to watch somebody creating something like this. And what you and your team at Geekset are doing is you're creating a space and you're amplifying voices. And I love it so much. I really do. I just want to stress that. I really want to stress that, like, I love it so much. I'm going to love so much taking you down this road too, because we're going to jump into our quick fire game now. Hit me with your best shot if you're ready. Okay, you ready for this?
I'm ready.
It's 5 questions. First thing that pops in your head, you don't owe an explanation to anybody. Okay. So whatever your opinion is, no matter how hot a take you think it is, you just give it the first thing that pops in your head and roll with it, stick with it. Since it's only fair, at the end of those 5 questions, you're going to have a chance to fire away. That means you can ask Ed and I any kind of question that you would like, and we solemnly swear we're going to answer honestly. So Deuces, you ready?
I'm ready.
Tell me the best thing you've seen at karaoke.
The best thing I've seen in karaoke. So at anime conventions, there's a lot of people that karaoke. Best thing I, because they have different rooms that do karaoke. The best thing that I seen in karaoke was a full Naruto cosplay group. Like, I'm talking about, they're in full animated cosplay, but they were rapping Snoop Dogg and Dr. J, Gin and Juice. And it was just like, wait, what? it was so amazing. It was just seeing that coach, because it was like, you don't expect it, because you see the cosplay, the good cosplay. So now you're seeing the character. So inessentially, I was seeing Naruto and Sasuke saying Gin and Juice. It was amazing.
What is the worst thing you've seen in karaoke?
So the worst thing I've seen, and this is where I say you can't be too serious. It's just, again, hecklers, man. Like, somebody up there singing, trying to have fun, and you heckling their singing. But it eventually turned to the great thing, because the crowd turned into heckler, which is like, yeah, I love the community and everything.
That sounds like, I feel like Ez threatened to punch somebody in the face before that started heckling in the bar. So like,
sounds like me. Yeah,
that sounds like you. So what's the one song you would love to do karaoke, but you've just never been able to find?
Ooh, I haven't karaoke as much. So I can't base it off of, I haven't been able to find it, because certain ones, I guess I never looked, but I'm gonna base it off of if I just never did it.
Let me rephrase the question a little bit for you then. So what's a song you would love to hear someone sing at karaoke that you've just never heard?
The one track that I think that I would like to hear from karaoke, so because I'm bringing the hip hop elements to it and everything, I'm going to say First of the Month by Bone Thugs and Harmony. Ooh. And the reason why I say that, and the reason why I love Bone Thugs and Harmony, is because they were one of the first artists that did bring cadence and everything like that. And I believe that one, First of the Month is such a feel good song, like the same way as like Today Was a Good Day, because who doesn't love the first of the month, right? And because of the way that it happens, and the ones that I do love is, like, again, when it comes out of the cadence, it's a good sing-along. It's wake up, wake up, wake up. It's the first of the month. Get up, get up, get up. So it's like, I feel like I haven't seen many people go to that one. I feel like it's so fit perfectly for karaoke.
Now, imagine that somebody kidnapped your family.
Uh-oh.
And the only way to release them was to wow the kidnappers with a karaoke performance. Mm-hmm. What song do you choose?
Wayward Son.
All right. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, I love it.
I'm going to give an explanation for this one.
Please.
One, I feel like, so the wow factor will be like, you chose that song? Like, they'll look at me and they're like, that song? And then when I go in with it and I give the commitment of a lifetime, then that's the extra wild factor. Like, oh, you really know this song.
Can I dig into this just a minute? Is Wayward Son like a reference to like Supernatural, or is it just something that you do? It's Supernatural. Okay.
100% Supernatural.
Gotcha.
I've always known the song, and probably by season 4, I was like, this is my song. That's because I look for it. And for my Supernatural fans out there, I'll be, like I said, I'm a geek. I think it was season 9. one of the seasons, I believe it was season 9, at the season finale, they didn't do it. And that bugged me for the longest because, you know, in Supernatural, they sang Wayward Son at the season finale episode of every season. In season 9, they didn't. And I was just like, wait, what? And even when the next season happened, I just always referenced it back. Like, why did they make that choice? Like, I felt so empty about it. It didn't feel like the official send-off of that season. So, yeah.
I just needed to get to the bottom of it because you hit. Okay. Great. So here's my favorite question to ask people. If you could magically strike one song from every karaoke playlist forever, so no one will ever sing at a karaoke ever again, which song would you choose?
Okay. So hip hop people are probably going to be mad, but I'm going to say Baby Got Back. I feel like Baby Got Back as I wouldn't say it's played out, I would say it needs to be retired. We should retire. We can retire the jersey. It's like, yeah. I feel like everybody has done it at this point.
Yeah, we can put it in the banners. You're going to get no right. arguments for us. Yeah.
because we got to respect it. We got to respect it for what it is. So it's not like just get it out here. We got to just got to put it in the banners. You got to hang it up.
Hang it up, yeah. Have the ceremony for it, the light, the whole 9 yards, the rings, and the whole 9 yards.
My absolute favorite thing about that song, though, is that Sir Mix-a-Lot samples himself and a previous song on it. I'm like, that is the most hip-hop thing I can think of. I am sampling myself. That's how great I am.
So now I'm about to nerd out with hip-hop real quick. Hip-hop fact. One of my favorite producers is DJ Premier, or AKA Primo. You may have heard people call him out, but that's what he does. If when any artist that he works with, he samples them, and he's a DJ, so he scratches it. And so, like, you'll hear that artist's previous song being sampled as the hook or like the back, or, you know, the additional vocals on the track. But he is one of my favorite producers because of that. I love that aspect of it. So that you are right on the money. That is definitely pure hip hop.
See, now this is like the expansion of my hip hop education, which is never going to be ending. And I love it. So I'm going to have to go back and check out what you just talked about. Yeah. I don't think I've ever listened like DJ Primo. I've never dug into it. So I'm going to have to go back.
You may have and didn't even notice it. Right. So it's like, I'm not for sure who you like your hip hop era, but like with not. So one of the biggest songs that a lot of people know, cause it was on the radio, Nas had a song when he first came out called Nas Is Like, and it starts off, you know, you hear like Nas Is Like, and that's him from another song. And it kind of gets sampled and everything. But even with like Jay-Z, like said, he had a song on Volume 3 called So Ghetto, and it's the same thing. You're hearing him being sampled and everything. And so DJ Premier works with a lot of people, and you probably heard it, but didn't notice who that producer was. When you embark on this journey, you start listening. You're like, oh, yeah, I do know this song. I guarantee you'll hear a song that you know.
We hit you with our best shot. You have a chance to fire away. If you have any question, you can ask Ed and I any question you like, and we swear we're going to answer honestly. Yeah.
Okay. It's a two-parted question.
Okay.
And I want to hear, one, who was the first artist that you heard hip hop? Like, what was the first hip hop artist that you heard?
So, I mean, I grew up, I'm a little older than both of you. Okay. So the first person I remember hearing myself had to have been Run DMC.
Oh, that's a nice one.
Because I was born in the 70s, grew up in the 80s, and that's what I listened to growing up. So it was Run DMC.
Okay.
It might have been Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, but just I feel like I heard Run DMC first. So
I mean, those they're around the same era, so I can see like that can be kind of like, I don't know which one I heard first. So
yeah,
So I talked a little bit about Tag Team and that album, the first album that I owned. I'm pretty sure the first hip hop song that I remember hearing and becoming obsessed with is what we'll say is Death Squad's cover of Rapper's Delight.
Oh, okay.
I remember just like hearing that and just being obsessed with it. Like I couldn't get the beat out of my head. Like I still know every word to Rapper's Delight, certain versions of it. And that's one of Ed and I's magic tricks that we do. but that was one of the first things I grew up with so I'll go with that. Yeah.
That's another good karaoke song.
It's very long, but it's fun when Adam and I do it because we don't need the screen for most versions. So we will just walk around the bar and be jerks.
Do you guys bounce off lyrics?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
every Ed and I's magic trick is Rapper's Delight, where we'll bounce off verse and we'll like do some of the vocalizations that are on the undercurrent of the track too. Just to add to it. And for Run DMC, like you have to have that back and forth. We're still looking for the track. If you asked Ed and I the track that at least me, the track that I really, really want is
Peter Piper
by Run DMC. We love that one day.
Yeah. Okay, so the second part of the question is, what is your favorite hip hop song of all time? Ooh. And this is a hard one, but
Deuces, that is a mean question. That's mean. Your favorite, your one favorite, that is mean.
So I have one that pops into my head. I'll start, Ed. I'll give Ed a second to think about this. You asked like a little bit. My hip hop learning like expanded a lot when I met Ed, but I grew up in the 90s. My favorite artist for a very long time, still one of my favorites of all time, is Jay-Z. Like, I just love the sound. I loved what was coming out of that era. I loved just the flow, the whole entire like beef with Nas. Like, I loved everything that was being created there. There is a song on that is a B-side that he did called I Can't Get With That.
Love it.
That I absolutely, I can't get over that song. I hear that every time I hear that song, like, it's one of my favorite things to listen to. I trip. I got a money machine and it goes that. Like, that entire flow, like,
yeah,
when he was dropping that, I'm like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, like, and that's classic Jay-Z too. Yeah,
yeah, that's like raw Jay-Z, like, yeah, like, because he got heavily produced a little bit later, and that's just when he was just spitting when he was young, like right at the foundation of Rockefeller Records. So that's my favorite track of all time. I mean, there's a lot of newer stuff.
Oh yeah, of course.
Too, but, you know, but like that's the one that I will hold on to forever.
Same. Yeah.
The ringtone on my phone is my melody, Eric B and Rakim.
Oh, that's a nice one.
But if I have to go with like my all-time favorite, like just the one track that like I will put on and be extremely happy with hearing is Ain't No Half Step and Big Daddy Kane.
I like that one too. Yeah. You guys got some good, you got some chops. You guys made it seem like you guys did like was not like, like yeah, I was gonna pick like some cookie cutter hip hop. Like you guys are deep, man.
I did literally write a grad school paper on Ain't No Half Steppin.
Oh, I won't lie. You should at some point you got to like reproduce that out,
right?
Of show the world that sounds pretty dope.
We're all waiting for it, Ed. I have like Ed will go deep. My mind's definitely not as my hip hop rap knowledge is definitely not as deep as Ed. Like I said, I'm in a constant state of learning and just experiencing it. But that's it, Deuces. That's all we had for you today, man. It was so great talking to you. And what we'd like to do at this point in the show is, it's now your show. Talk whatever you want to talk about. Tell people how they can follow you, how they can find you, how they can support Geek Set. Anything you want to talk about, the floor is yours. Take it away.
All right. Well, thank you. All right. So again, first things first, man, thank you guys for having me, man. This has been an amazing time, man. I feel like I can talk to you guys forever. I look forward to, you know, meeting you guys in person at some point throughout some walk of life, man. We're going to have some beers and we're going to sing some karaoke, hopefully. That. And thank you to all the listeners and you guys as viewers who's been watching, who's been rocking with y'all. I'm excited to be introduced to them. I go by Young Deuces. I'm part of the Geek Set podcast, the only podcast that blend hip-hop culture and geek culture together. And we are creators in this space. We are not just a podcast. We kind of put out videos. We do interviews. We got a review show that's called Geek Set Rewind, where we give our live reactions to stuff, to shows and big major properties. We have our tour review show called Sofrito Poppy's Review, ran by one of my co-hosts, Lib. And it's literally a review show. He talks about figures and unboxing and talks about that. And we got a show coming up that's called Create a Player, where we're talking to cosplayers and we're pretty much detailing them on an episodic journey of their cosplay journey, how they go shop, how they put things together, how they choose the cosplay, and then the reveal of it. So it's like we're excited about those shows in regards to that. But right now, the mission is the Black Geek documentary. As stated, we are crowdsourcing it. And, you know, we're trying to, again, we want to make sure that we're not half-stepping on this procedure. Like, so we want to make sure that we're filming it with a director who knows what they're doing. We're doing it at a studio so we get the best audio quality. And we're making sure that, you know, it's going to be a documentary that's like, yo, this is something that is really, really cool. So the best ways to support it is we have two financial ways, which is the GoFundMe and then our Patreon. Our Patreon, all funds are being reallocated towards the Black Geek documentary and, of course, the GoFundMe. But if you don't have the means to support us financially, that's A-OK, because you see the tweet, you see the documentary, you see the post, whatever like that, liking it, commenting it, retweeting it. This is something that is just as important as, you know, donating to the funds in regards to it. And also, you know, just I've been on this kick for the geeks that are listening. One of the things is I've been saying in my sign out is that anime that you have in your queue for 2 years that you say I'm going to get to, watch it today. If you're hearing me right now, jump off and after this and go watch it. In the geek community, we say, oh, I'm going to watch this. I'm going to add it to my queue. 2 years later down the road, you never jumped into it. So I'm trying to change that. You can find me at all social media platforms. Me personally, young_deuces, consistent everywhere. And then at Geek Set Podcast, consistent everywhere. We drop videos weekly. So you on YouTube, youtube.com/Geek Set Podcast, check us out. And yeah, man, be a part of the community. It's an all-inclusive community. We accept new geeks. We accept old geeks. Like, if you're new to a genre, come in. Like I said, we love creating lists. That's the one thing that we love doing. Some people are just like, I don't know where to start. I'm like, all right, well, look here. I'm going to create a list. And I get creative with my list. I add a little bit of hip-hop flair. So I'm like, all right, if you want to watch an anime where people are catching them hands, all right, watch these animes. If you want to watch an anime where it's like they go crazy with, like, I use that type of terminology, but it's like, I make it simple for people, because it's just to shoot out a list. It's like, okay, you don't, like, why am I starting this list? So I categorize the list, and I love doing that for people. I base it off of the people's, you know, personality. So it's like, come join in our Discord and our YouTube comment, get introduced to some really cool people across the world, and let's talk some geek shit. That's one of our slogans. We're talking that geek shit.
Deuces, I can't thank you enough for coming on and talking to us about karaoke, introducing our listeners to what you got going on, and yeah, you know, talking about the space that you're creating. Like, I'm really grateful. Thank you.
No problem, man. I appreciate you guys having me.
And we certainly hope to see you singing at a screen sometime soon.
Everybody out there in podcast land, I have one message for you. Thank you. Thank you so much for listening to us. And if you're happy and want to make us happy, then you could, you know, go ahead and follow us on Twitter at Sung Poorly. We have a Facebook page out there for The Greatest Song Ever Sung Poorly. Make sure to find us on Facebook. We're going to start like posting questions to really engage the audience, because I feel like that's something we are going to make a concerted effort to do, is engage you, the best listeners in the world, in some questions. So you can check out the one we're asking about this particular episode in the Facebook group. We want to hear from you. We'll mention you. You drop a response, we'll mention you in the next episode. sungpoorly@gmail.com is where you can reach us if you're interested. Ask us some questions. I know we're going to have a full-on episode where we're going to answer your hot karaoke questions, address some of your hot karaoke takes. www.sungpoorly.com is where you can go to check us out, find a way to share with your friends the great shit that we're doing here, or just buy some merch that you can rock at your karaoke night. Send us a picture of you wearing the merch too. Ed, don't you love seeing those? I love seeing you wear our merch.
I'm pretty sure I wear nothing else at this point. And while you're doing that, if you get a chance, leave a review on Spotify, iTunes, or Good Pods, or Podchaser, you know, wherever you can leave a review. And also thanks to Ben Dumb, one of our dear, dear friends who has given us our theme song, Gasoline. You can find him at the Ben Dumb 3 on all music platforms, or his earlier projects, Ben Dumb and the Deviants and The Marauders.
And make sure to tune in 2 weeks from now when we go back to the funny stuff. I feel like we've had a departure from the funny stuff this episode, but we're going to refocus on being funny next episode with someone who loves karaoke almost as much as she loves Weird Al. That's it. That's all. There is no more. So until next time, I'm Adam Wainwright.
I'm Ed Kennard.
And remember that singing off key is still technically singing.
Oh yeah, listen here. It's only right. And matter of fact, it's gonna be like a sleeper agent. If I see you and you see me and we're somewhere, I'm gonna figure out a way to karaoke, because I feel like that's it. I'm like, oh, they're here, so I gotta karaoke.
You're not wrong.
We're adding Milwaukee to our tour now. Like, we're having a karaoke tour of the world. We're adding Milwaukee to the tour.
Oh man, you know what? There's some good bars. If y'all come to Milwaukee, definitely let me know. I'll make sure that we get you guys out there, and we'll go. That'll be the mission. Tonight, we are going karaoke.